Colonel Hutchison, Reel 4. We're talking about when you moved to Whitby and about the your new armoured status. Now, that before we go into the exercise, I'd like to ask about the new tanks you got, because you seem to have got Matildas and Valentines, and I wondered how they'd been distributed and what you actually got in your troop.
Well, there were Valentines, and squadron headquarters had a couple of Matildas, but they were all armed with two-pounder guns, which is a really pretty minimal weapon, and all said and done.
So you had Valentines?
Yes.
And could you give us a description of the Valentine and your assessment of it?
Well, the crew was three again. A driver, a gunner, and a commander, who was also the wireless operator. It wasn't a large tank, but it it might have been just about a match for a German Mark III, but certainly not for a Mark IV.
So it was a generation behind?
Yeah. Anyway, there was nothing else.
Were you pleased with them? I mean, they were a big step upon the Mark VI-B.
So, yes. Fair enough, yes. Yes.
And what was it like... As a vehicle, I mean, was it easy to drive and manoeuvrable and reliable?
Moderately so. I mean, the one thing about the American Sherman that we eventually fought in for most of that Northwest European campaign was, for all its other shortcomings, was mechanically quite reliable.
I'll save perhaps some of that. So, yeah. Now, the exercises, you mentioned the exercises. They had some big exercises on the Yorkshire Moor, and you were about to tell us about about one.
It was one on the Yorkshire Moors. We did a lot of training, of course, on the Yorkshire Moors, which weren't very suitable for tanks, to get the tanks bogged on the soft board. No, right, we cut out that part. Well, I can't remember what it was called, but it was an autumn exercise. And I can't remember much about it, but it was... pretty average shambles, and as far as we were concerned, it finally decided Chris Pito that Eric Sport had got to go, and that he was, not in control of the situation.
What had you done wrong as a unit?
I can't remember. I think, what was I? I was just a troop leader. I second in command of the squadron at the time. Anyway, I wasn't in a really in a good enough position to assess how fair it was to blame Eric Sword for a bit of a balls up.
They also seem to have got rid of. Perhaps got rid of, McIntyre went at the same time.
At the same time, I think, because quite frankly, McIntyre would have been sort of 40-ish by then, and wasn't really sufficiently militarily competent, I think, to be second in command of that regiment, because it was after all that means that he should be fit for command. To be second in command, and he certainly that right. And so he was removed about the same time, but I think for different reasons. I think that he really wasn't an appropriate person, age or experience, military experience, to be a Secretary for Armed Forces. And he, from there on, you see, he was in administrative jobs in the army.
Now, your new ones were Colonel Cooper. What was he like? He came in first. He wasn't there a long time, but he came in to replace.
Yes, he was G2 at 11th Armored Division. He was a tank regiment man and very much one of General Hobart's boys. He was a man in his 40s, I suppose. I got on always quite well with George Cooper, but he wasn't liked in the regiment.
Why not?
I think he tried to be very professional. I think he was a bit arrogant. He was certainly ambitious. I think he felt he'd been put in to pull out the Fife and Forbes socks and to turn them into a professional regiment instead of being a yeomanry. And in point of fact, we weren't all that inefficient at all. I think that's fair, but I think that was what he felt. Maybe he was slightly embarrassed by that.
Do you think he saw it as...
He was with us. He commanded the regiment from when he came, in that autumn. October, was it?
About then, yeah.
Hmm?
Sometime around then, yes.
October 41. For a bit more than a year, I think. I think he left us when we were in Newmarket.
Now, do you think he made a difference? I mean, he obviously saw himself as being brought in, or you thought he saw himself as being brought in to pull your socks up. Do you think he did have an impact on the regiment? Or do you think it...
I don't think he did, no.
He
did some... I think he did some stupid things. For instance, he sacked John Pearl, who was commanding Headquarters Squadron, I think, at the time, and who later commanded A Squadron.
Joe Pearl, yes.
John Pearl, yes. He sacked him.
Now, why? Because he...
Well, I don't know. I don't remember, but it was quite soon after he came. Because John Pearl was a nobody's fool and I knew him very well. And of course, he commanded A Squadron that. And I knew him anyway, he was sort of close to his personal friend. I don't know why he should have done that, but he made some funny appointments.
Such as?
I think he felt he had to be a new groom.
And what about the other one? The other new, I mean, separate issue, but McIntyre was replaced by a Major George Trotter, was it?
Yes.
Well, now, what did you feel about George Trotter? How did he fit in? Because he also wasn't a fifeman.
He came for the Greys. Can't remember what he was doing before he came to us. Did he come? Yes, he came at the same time.
Around about that time. At Whitby, anyway. What was George Trotter like as second in command?
I mean, I think limited ability and. Rather pleased with himself, not very clever, bit of a womanizer, I think. Although I don't know, John Gilmore Eric Scott thought he was windy, and that's why he sacked him as second in command in the middle of the campaign in Normandy, or somewhere, I can't remember.
We'll perhaps come back to that.
I wasn't aware of this myself.
Now, some of the younger officers who were said that he was very county, hunting, shooting and fishing. Yeah. Now, they may also have thought, perhaps...
Well, me.
They may have done. They didn't mention it, but was there that element about George Trotter? And was did the mess start to split, in a sense, between the landed or the more wealthy Scottish families and the perhaps other less well-off individuals, yes, who the wartime only officers, yes, who were coming in? Was there any element of that in the mess?
Not much, I don't think. But I think George Trotter would not have been a help. He wasn't a good mixer. He was. He wouldn't have been particularly friendly. He wouldn't encourage the avoidance of that sort of an atmosphere, I don't think.
How did you feel about that whole thing? I mean, would you have wanted the mess to be open and friendly, or were you part of a faction?
I think it was. I certainly felt that, and sometimes we have squadron messes. For instance, at Bridlington, we have squadron messes rather than regimental messes, I think, because of the accommodation that's available.
So it would be fair to say that George Trotter was in that hunting, shooting, fishing mould.
He was. That doesn't mean to say that he couldn't have been a good mixer, but he wasn't a particularly good mixer.
Right. Any other new officers or characters that came in while you were at Whitby before we move on? Any other new officers or characters that joined at that time? Oh, not particularly at the moment.
No, I can't think of...
Must be difficult to remember when exactly...
I can't think of any other important...
Now, one thing that happened is that they had a series of psychiatric tests done, which the Sellers makes a big joke about, or a small joke about, rather, that all officers and men had to do psychiatric tests to see, judge their fitness for various things. Were you aware of that? Do you remember it?
No.
And the other thing is visits to Pembroke firing range. Do you recall that at all? And generally gunnery, which was almost a new thing. You'd only had these little machine gun types. I mean, gunnery was something new. Even
we went down in December, I think, that year, to a place called Lennehead, to do battle practices, which we did several times.
Now, what could you describe what the battle practice was like at Lennehead? What would you actually do?
Well, I think you did it as a squadron. The dimension of the thing was about suitable for that. And the tanks were on, and targets appeared, and they shot at them, and then you went on. And I think that first one, down at Lennehead, was a pretty fair shambles. The place was a sea of mud. And I don't think that we did very well.
What were the targets, if you don't
know? I can't remember. Things had bobbed up. And so I don't remember. We went several times there. And in fact, the last time we went to Lennehead, about a year before D-Day, the autumn before D-Day, I was brigade gunnery officer, and I spent a month there. Greatly enjoyed.
We'll perhaps come on to that. Yeah. Anything else about Whitby you recall? You were there a long time, actually. You were there till April 1942. So
that's right.
9 or 10 months.
Through the winter.
Not much else.
I was during that time. I was switched to B squadron.
Now, why was that?
The captain.
Was that why you were switched? Because you were promoted, or?
I was, I know. No, maybe I wasn't immediately. It was when I was there, I think, that I became a captain.
Now, why did you switch squadrons?
Well, I don't remember why I was switched. anyway, I was. But I remember going up in February that year and spending 10 days or so with another troop commanded by an old boy called Teddy Lee. I don't know if he's still alive. I shouldn't think so, Teddy Lee. Anyway, he and I went up to a village called Moorsholm, and we had it was very cold. We had a hell of a fall of snow. We were snowed in there, remember? We had to dig our way out. Tilly and I stayed in a pub. The men had got into digs and billets, in the village. We were supposed to do training over the moors because it didn't damn all the kinds of snow.
Do you remember? I forgot. Which troop were you put in? What troop were you put into in B Squadron? Do you know which troop you were given? And I should have asked that about when you were with C Squadron as well. I don't think I did.
No. Oh. I can't remember what troop I was.
In either.
But I can see the face of the troop sergeant. I don't know what his name was. I don't know.
And so you did you find it more congenial? Did you prefer being in B Squadron? You said you preferred Sir John to Major Nairn.
I was perfectly happy in B Squadron. No, I wouldn't like to make sort of a comparison. I was longer in C Squadron than in B.
But you'd been happy enough in C Squadron. You hadn't asked to.
I mean, John Gilmore I knew extremely well. I can't remember when I was promoted captain.
Did it make a difference being promoted captain?
Well, I became second in command of the squadron when I was captain. I think maybe when I went to A Squadron that I became.
Were you with B Squadron long? When did you go to A Squadron? Well, perhaps another way of looking at it.
I think we're in a new market.
So the next move from Whitby, I think, is down to Brighton Hove area.
Yeah.
Where I'm not quite sure of where your movements around. They seem to be at Hove, Stanmer Park, which is just outside Brighton. And then Bynum, which I don't know where that is at all.
Yes.
Now, what do you remember of that period?
Well, it was rather nice. I mean, it was a restricted area, Brighton, of course, and therefore, from the socialising point of view, there was much better food and drink possibilities than there might have been elsewhere. We were beginning to bite after the sort of rationing again. We spent quite a lot of time on a great big core, if not army exercise, called Tiger.
Now, what was that like? Because that was a hard ration exercise, as they called it.
Yes.
What did that mean? What was the exercise like?
I think it was more, rather than tactical, I think it was more experience in administration of movement of troops about, you know, on a large scale. It was in Kent. I remember we spent quite a few days, and it was rather wet weather in early summer in the woods around Sittinghurst. You know Sittinghurst? And I think that Colonel Alec and George Trotter used to go and hobnob with Peter and Harold Nicholson.
Had Alec Scott arrived then?
No.
So Colonel Cooper.
It would have been Cooper, I
suppose. I was just checking, because I thought he arrived a bit later.
Yes, that's right.
Well, how about the hard rations? They seem to have been practising being on, you know, limited rations. Do you recall that, whether that was a hardship, restricted rations?
Didn't perhaps go on for long enough.
Did they practise keeping one of the big things people often say about war is being kept awake? And, you know, the difficulties in sleeping, getting time to sleep. Did they practice that kind of realism in an exercise like Tiger, or was it really just movement and giving the staff practice shunting you around the country?
I don't remember that as being a deliberate intention for that exercise. It was wasn't all that onerous, I don't think. Went on for quite a bit. And it was, yes, in the, I think it must have been about June, but soon after we got back, we were moved up to Bury St Edmunds.
Possibly just before that, or at Bury St Edmunds, you got the Crusader and Covenanters.
Yes,
and I wonder,
just began to get from them.
Right. What about those two tanks? Was it again? Because no one seems to have gone into action, the Covenanter in any unit, but the Crusader. What were these tanks like, and how were they distributed amongst the regiment? Was there much difference between them?
Between the Crusader and the Covenanter, no. I think it was a slight preference for the Crusader, but they were similar. They had the same thin armour and light armament. They were faster. They weren't particularly reliable, but they were a bit sort of more thoroughbred. They were faster. But again, no match for a Mark IV. And just a two-pounder gun. Though I rather think they were beginning to mount six-pounders in them at some stage.
Which was still...
But thank God we didn't go to war with them.
And did you at the time think they were a step up on the old, on the Valentines? I mean, were they manifestly better than the Valentines? It didn't seem to have been that much difference between them.
No. Frankly, in fact, they were faster and more manoeuvrable. And they were more thoroughbreds. The Valentine was rather a pedestrian tank. A bit of a plodder, so that I think that, but otherwise, no, for all intents and purposes, they weren't superior.
And the next thing, by August 42, you were in Farnham All Saints camp, which is just outside Bury St Edmunds.
Yes.
That was a hutted camp. Well, I think one of your first times
yes.
in hut. How did the, what was it like living in huts?
Well, so was a Newmarket hutted camp. So that we had, we were in hutted camps, you see, from then onwards. We weren't in Farnham Park for very long, you know. July, August, September. I think by October we'd gone to Newmarket. I think Newmarket was a bit more comfortable, but it was hutted just the same.
That while it's at this period, these two camps, that the English really seem to start flooding in. Who were they replacing? What was happening to your Scots? Because, you know, they were coming in, but where were the Scots going?
I don't remember that as being a period when change was being accelerated, but we may have been just simply weeding out ineffectives, or we may be asked to draft people into other regiments overseas. I honestly don't remember.
You've said that there's no difference from how the English were received, because we've already discovered discussed that. The other thing is that the replacement of Colonel Cooper with Alex Scott,
yes.
who you went to war with, and is an important figure, I think, that we should perhaps spend a bit of time with. What were your first impressions of Alex Scott when he arrived, while you were at Newmarket, I think?
Well, I think quite favourable. Mind you, I think one would be prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt, because Cooper was not liked. In fact, I remember, I didn't hear this, because I can't remember how well I was. Chris Pito, who left gave up command of the 29th Armed Brigade about that sort of time, said, "My parting gift to the Fife and Four is to get rid of George Cooper."
So he really was disliked. He was known. Where did he go?
Cooper.
He wasn't bowler hatted.
After we got to Newmarket, I think.
No, sorry, where? I mean, he wasn't bowler hatted, was he? Where were you?
No. He may have been promoted. He'd never been gone back to a staff appointment. He was a G2 at Division 4, but I think he went out of the division. I may have gone to the War Office or something like that. I think he did a staff job.
But you were glad to see the back of him overall.
Yes.
And now, what about Scott? Could you give us? I mean, what was he like as a man?
Very shy man. I think he was quite. He must have been quite bright, Alec. Though he didn't give that impression. I mean, he had two absolutely brilliant sons. They really were. Very clever. They were little boys then, but when they grew up, they really were all successful. I've lost touch with them. And a very nice and intelligent wife, who was much more outgoing than Alec was. Tended to be a bit shy, but he also had a nice, if dry, sense of humour. A quiet man.
Did he have the necessary steel to be a good colonel to control his regiment? I mean, because he was shy, quiet, but did he, I mean, how did he control his...
He was quite firm, and he was quite capable of making decisions and getting rid of people. I mean, I was in A Squadron by then, and second in command of A Squadron, a nice chap who was a bit on the old side for the job, Robert Bruce, was commanding the squadron. Cooper had promoted him. And he really, quite frankly, wasn't up to the job.
In what way? What was wrong?
Well, I think he was just too old, probably.
How old was he?
He was 40s by then. I mean, they were in the middle 20s, I don't know. No more, but it seemed old. But
do you mean he wouldn't be
in sort of exercises, squadron exercises, and bigger ones, and that sort of thing? I think he showed evidence that he wasn't quite able to cope. I don't think. I think.
What sort of evidence? What sort of thing?
Get into a bit of muddle over things. I think we rely on his sergeant operator to sort of keep him right. He's a nice chap, Robert. Not an easy man. I think that's another reason. Not a very good mixer. But he joined the regiment with Alistair Grant, neither of them alive now, of course, about the same time, just before the war. And they were both in headquarters squadron at that time. I think he would be... Anyway, he left the regiment, I think.
Altogether?
About then. And then... I think the last thing he was doing, I thought he was a major domo, I think, what they call it, in a town, a military appointment. In Europe, he was doing that sort of thing. I don't remember exactly when he left us.
Now, he was replaced with who? Who became ace?
Not suitable, I think, for an administrative job at his age.
So who took over A Squadron then?
John Pearl.
Was it John or Joe? I should ask this.
John.
It was John, because it's in the books as Joe, but it is John, as John. You knew him, it was John. His men may have called him Joe, and it stuck. Now, we passed over him briefly, but what was he like? I mean, he'd been sacked from headquarters squadron, in your opinion, wrongly. Now, what was he like during this period? We'll come to him in action later, but at this period as A Squadron commander?